with a $5 meal deal with new McValue. You pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal, $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
This is going to be huge for you. Don't lose it.
I lost it.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 514 for the week, June 10th, 2024. I am Clear Crayon, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Avant-Garde Letter, Sarah D. Bunting.
I'm proud to be niche.
Black Puffer Coat, Tara Ariano.
I give up!
And Get Up Gym Class Forever Note, Josh Gondelman.
If you get struck by lightning, you never have to do the President's Physical Fitness Challenge.
Yes. Welcome to Extra Hot, great for another week. Joining us, he is a stand-up comic, he's a writer, he's an online pep talker. You've heard him with us before, although it's been a while. Welcome back, Josh Gondelman!
Yeah! Welcome back, Josh. Oh, hello, thank you so much for having me. Such a pleasure to be back.
We're thrilled to have you to talk about HBO's new show, Fantasmus. This is a show that's almost impossible to summarize, but I will try. Julio Torres, lives in a highly artificial city where different spaces are framed by metal poles and surrounded by unconvincing screen projections. He's an artist whose many interests include consulting with Crayola on a clear crayon, but even in this fake world, he is dogged by the need for a proof of existence card, something he has very intentionally chosen not to acquire, but which may result in his inability to rent a new apartment when he gets evicted from his. Distracting himself from his problems by acquiring a golden oyster earring only complicates his journey further. The show was created by Torres, who also wrote and directed all six episodes. Only one has aired so far on HBO, so we will try to avoid mentioning anything spoilery from later episodes, although, honestly, outside of context, it's kind of impossible to spoil. Let's do the Chen check-in. Josh, should our listeners watch Fantasmus?
Yeah, I've only seen the first episode, and I say you gotta watch it. You gotta watch the things Julio does.
Sarah.
I adored it, so yes.
Dave.
Yeah, big recommendation for me.
I agree as well. Let's get into the nitty-gritty. Alf is a quintessentially dumb high-concept 80s sitcom. It is a perennial subject of spoofs for that reason. Can we agree with Melf in the first episode of Fantasmus that the ultimate Alf spoof has been achieved? We're all set for the rest of time. Josh, your thoughts?
Yeah, it was great. One wonderful thing about the Melf spoof is that you didn't know the pacing of the show. Mm-hmm. So it just dives into this taxi TV Melf cutaway. Mm-hmm. And then you're there for probably like 6 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's like incredible. It's so funny and weird and like sad. And I loved it.
It was so quick into the show, too. Not only was it very long, it was like at minute four.
By the time Melf ends, the bulk of the show has been Melf.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that's part of what makes the show kind of uncategorizable. It's like sort of a sitcom and sort of a sketch show. Like right from the beginning, it straddles both worlds. We should say a little bit about what Melf is, though. Dave, do you want to try and describe it?
Oh, so Melf is sort of a mostly Elf, but also a little bit of Mork, I think.
There's a lot of throughout the show, gender neutral pronoun use as kind of the default. So like Melf feels like a they to
right.
me.
Yeah,
a they
absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Melf is,
pink fur notwithstanding,
60% Elf, but pastel colors with a little bouncy antennae, but much more amorous.
Yes.
And wanting some domestic stability in their lives than Elf.
When we get to Melf wants the house, I was dying. It's so funny.
So funny.
I don't want Melf at the wedding.
Yes.
Sent me over the edge, at which I had arrived because I saw Melf holding a tube of lubricant.
Uh-huh,
it just goes there without delay. And that's one of the things that I love about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's like 40 seconds between Melf loves cookies and spaghetti to carrying around a big bottle of lube.
Yeah. Melf doesn't want to be on the side. Melf wants to be first. It's like such a funny thing.
And if you haven't watched the sitcom in this fever dream of a reality that is this show, it's got Paul Dano as the nuclear family father. Mm-hmm. He like instantly falls in love with Melf and mm-hmm. vice versa. And mm-hmm. they're sort of trying to keep it from the wife, but they're not doing a very good job because interrupted in the kitchen, interrupted. But it goes from 0 to 60.
So fast.
Yeah. But this was done with such a velocity that it just took me by surprise. I love
yeah.
it.
Another, I would say, comic go-to that gets kind of eviscerated in this episode is drawings of dicks. We all enjoyed American Vandal, especially season one. But they really get to something very tender in the dick drawing sketch. Josh, talk about that one.
This really cracked me up because I think one of the like Julio Torres staples to me in this that was evident from the beginning is presenting something that is so silly or so surreal and then like grounding it with impossible stakes. So Eudora Peterson plays a teacher who is in a bathroom at the school that she works at and sees drawings of dicks all over the stall, but then one where the head of the penis is kind of coyly tucked under the shaft in like kind of averting the gaze of the viewer. And then she becomes consumed with who created it and finds out it's the bully at school and has this like very tender, self-aware interaction with him. It kind of strains her relationship with her partner. Mm-hmm. And like, it just is this, I don't, and this is in the world of the Fantasmas, the show itself, rather than a cutaway. This is like a backstory side story, I guess, right, of one of the characters that live in the world with Julio.
Yeah, one of the Chester's car tangents.
Yes, yeah, Chester's one cat. Of his fellow passengers.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And so it's this teacher who is in essentially a Chester pool with Julio and Julio's performance artist friend / agent.
Yeah.
Has this like side quest of trying to figure out who, and she has this teacher has this interaction with this bully who she's seen like knee a kid in the crotch for no reason, and she gave him detention, and he says like I feel like locked into this mode of masculinity, and so I act out, but I only act out so you see me acting out. And it's just this like incredibly funny like subtext becomes text place to take it.
Does so much in one episode, but you're never like, I wish they would go back to this. I wish they'd go back to that.
Yeah.
It's a whirlwind tour, but it all clicks somehow. And the vector of everything being Chester's car mm-hmm. is great. Because when you do have to like regroup, you're still in there, but it's like crazy kinetic still, you know, just going on a homegrown Uber ride somewhere.
Sarah, your intro handle referenced this, and I think we can all agree Q does come too early in the alphabet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then this is another, I mean, not to be this person, but Truffaut-esque, and I'll mm-hmm. get back to why I'm saying that, moment where it's like something that would just be sort of a throwaway observation to anyone else. Julio Torres will like spin it out to its logical conclusion. And there's, you know, Steve Buscemi as Q, mm-hmm. really struggling with his life and his role in the alphabet and like the sort of schlubby O who's calling him on the phone and like eating while he's talking on the phone. And then he yeah. tries to step out a window. But of course, he lives in this New York, which is enough like the real New York that when he mm-hmm. tries to jump out the window, the shaft of the neighboring building or the side of the neighboring building is like 8 inches away and he just gets stuck.
That made me laugh so hard.
I laughed so hard at that. This shouldn't work for me like on mm-hmm. paper, but I think I finally like solved the puzzle of why it works. And it's not just this confidence in being like, well, let's just go down this alley of story for a minute and then we'll come back to the road and Chester will pick us up and tie it all together. Mm-hmm. It's that the story and Torres like have enough real grounding things that are familiar in our reality, like the, you know, neighboring building being you know, there's that one sunbeam that fooled him, but it's 8 inches away. Or Amina's apartment with her partner and just how, like, New York-ily overcrowded on every windowsill and radiator top it is, with just the frumpiest items of everyday existence. And so even though you're having conversations about creating clear crayons, or, you know, here's this dream mechanism that allowed me to read a book without turning any of the pages, which, please invent that for real. There are these extremely real details, like in the sort of turned away dick graffito investigation, which my notes literally say, please let Torres do American Vandals seasons 3 through 88. I will watch them all. Mm-hmm. But there's this conversation with the teachers where her fellow teacher is like, the gay ones don't draw dicks, they draw eyes. And this is just received as correct. Mm-hmm. The scene moves on from there. So his ability to drop these like profound things in there, because he has tied everything else that is like surreal and candy colored, and the fact that the main character is wearing like late 90s rave clothes in every scene,
yeah,
like vinyl pants, is just like, but this could be real. Mm-hmm. So even though it's like obviously wildly stylized, that lets the like true parts of it be without mm-hmm. being twee. And that balance is extremely tough, not surprising from the Los Spookies guy, but just very cool. I just loved it and couldn't wait to see what it was going to tell me next, because mm-hmm. I always guessed wrong and I wasn't mad about it.
I completely agree. I think that like the grounding emotionally and like relatably, but like especially emotionally, it really takes it from being kind of a fully gonzo experience to one where you're like, oh, there is this emotional texture here, where Steve Buscemi as the letter Q is trying to kill himself because his performance art is just not for this world. Like, there's no recognition for someone as weird as he is. And then he sees WXYZ on television citing him as an mm-hmm. early influence for them, and he's just like overwhelmed by gratitude and sees that he does make a difference. And it's just this like surreal, lovely thing. I think they play it so real. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think this so sincerely, and I hope this doesn't sound backhanded at all, but like, I truly love that the work that Julio Torres makes, whether it's his stand-up special, My Favorite Shapes, which is wonderful, or Los Spookies, which is wonderful, you know, and he collaborated with Ana Fabrega creating that, and that it just he doesn't feel any pressure to make it like recognizable mm-hmm. other than in the ways where he wants it to be resonant, right? He wants to create a world that is like, this is fully from my collaborator's point of view. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to incorporate like, oh, this will be like the audience's way in. It's like, find your way in the window. And I think that's mm-hmm. really special.
Yeah, 100%. I can't think of another like creator in comedy right now for whom the aesthetics of what they do is so inextricable from like the story or the narrative or the sketch.
Joe Pera is kind of close mm-hmm. to me in terms of that. Mm. But I just think that's like such a wonderful thing to be like, I'm making this for you to enjoy, but I'm not going to spoon feed it to you. Like, it's not in opposition to the audience or confrontation mm-hmm. of the audience, but it is like not done for the comfort necessarily of the audience, even though Joe Pera's work is like, Joe Pera lulls you to sleep at times.
Right.
Like, the Joe Pera teaches you about the rat defense of Alberta mm-hmm. has mm-hmm. that same sort of vibe, which is like, here is a ludicrous story well told, but at the end of it, there are truths that he inserts in his particular way that very much mirrors what Torres is doing here in a very different style. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well observed. Yeah.
Indeed. I, you know, Josh, you're inside the industry. How likely is it that another show this singular is going to get greenlit in the next 5 years? Because it already sort of feels like, oh, this is a relic of something that like in a post two strikes world is not going to happen again.
I don't mean to sound cynical, but mm-hmm. I'm like dazzled that this exists now. especially mm-hmm. with like wonderful but niche fandom that Los Espookys seem to have. I'm just like glad that whoever at HBO is in charge of like protecting Julio Torres with their own body has maintained their job. Cause I don't know. I like, as I get older and as I get kind of more ingrained in my career, you know, I just appreciate this stuff so much more that people, because you see, when you see from the inside what it takes to make something like this happen, both in terms of executing a creative vision really beautifully and in terms of like getting it over the finish line and onto the, let's say, airwaves, it's like a really arduous thing. And it's cool there. That's like the stuff that I'm most interested now in mm-hmm. is the stuff that you're like, I can't believe this is allowed to mm-hmm. exist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll say one of the executive producers is Emma Stone. And I feel like between this and The Curse, she's like the person in TV in the past 6 months who's like, weird shit is going to happen if I have to literally do it myself. And she's in a future episode too.
Nathan Fielder is another person that I think mm-hmm. is like, I'm going to be I think he's the more confrontationally weird.
Yeah.
In a way that like Julio is not. He's just mm-hmm. like, I made this bauble for you.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Just basically what my favorite shapes kind of is.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, I think something else that works, and this is like hobby horse that is common to me, if anyone listening has ever heard me talk publicly or privately before, it is that it's like really funny. And that's what lets it be so weird. Mm-hmm. It's not, there is a lack of pretension around a lot of the jokes, even though there is no boundary to like how cerebral or fantastical or, you know, kind of off in its own world it can get. And then you see Steve Buscemi try to dive out a window and get wedged next to the building. And you're like, that's such a stupid physical gag. And that makes it that like the medicine goes down, or not even the medicine, but just like, you're like, oh, I don't just have to appreciate the kind of subtle ironies. I can also laugh at this, which is the same as like Los Espookys, the beginning of season mm-hmm. 2 is where they made that terrible Shakira statue and they bring it to the town to unveil. And like, that's like one of my biggest TV laughs of the last 5 years mm-hmm. is when they like unveil the statue and it looked horrible. And it's just like so, so, so dumb.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, it's not trying to be smarter than you are.
Yeah.
It just is like, it's trying to tell this story this way. Yeah. And it turns out that this story actually has a lot of ways in. Okay, one of them is like sidling in sideways between these two buildings into Q's apartment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it wants you to come in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not like sort of, I mean, I think sometimes high concept comedy is like daring you to like it and enjoy it. And it's like, well, then why is anybody doing this?
The Curse for sure. But I think sometimes even less elaborately conceived comedy tries to be smart in a way, or, you know, tries to seem smart in a way that is a hindrance to it actually being incisive or funny.
Mm-hmm.
There's a moment right at the start of the Chester's car introduction where Julio is a little bit confused about the difference between this and an Uber, and Chester is going off about all his grand plans and everything. But one of the perks of this community-minded car service is that people will pool from select Chipotle locations, the bathroom door codes for your use. And it was just like a little throwaway line that kind of like spoke to a lot of what's going on here. This like this weird little shifted reality. Mm-hmm. It's real, but it's fantastical, and it's like welcoming and accepting, and everybody is sort of like figuring out their way. There's a lot about that one little throwaway joke mm-hmm. that I felt like set a tone that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's part of like, you know, when you're describing Amina's apartment and how it's so crowded versus like what we see more of in future episodes, where there's a couple of references in this one where it's like, Julio, you could move into like the General Mills residences, mm-hmm. where it's sort of like, mm-hmm. there's a way that like the city, and I don't think they ever say it's New York, but it's clearly is like that it's closing, you know, like the weirdness is getting, and the proof of existence card is part of that too, where it's like, this is a narrative thread through the whole season that it's getting harder to live in this place. And so it's more important than ever for, you know, people to share the Chipotle bathroom coats, because you need those in order to like get by.
And it also felt to me like this is coming from someone who has spent a lot of time with the New York of, or like the big city, sort of like borderline dystopian cities of like warriors after hours, but like looked at it from a completely different angle than perhaps most viewers did. That I feel like if I'm watching After Hours, I'm like, you know, we've all been there. The last 20 flaps out the cab window, and then you're just in this, like, you're through the looking glass. I feel like Julio Torres is like that. Whereas I would be like, oh my god, now what's gonna happen? He'll be like, ooh, now what's gonna happen?
Yeah,
and that's,
yeah.
Since I'm completely not wired the way, like, with that sort of optimism and like, let's make this as weird as possible, that I'm like, oh my god, what weird shit's gonna happen now? That's part of what is really like invigorating and exciting for me to watch about the show, because it's like it's not my vibe at all, but I love it.
Specifically that nightclub in After Hours that's like hell, right, for for Griffin Dunn, is like kind of the safe haven where Julio and friends are just like talking about how it's like, it's like, oh, this is actually what you don't see because you're the kind of yuppie not you, Sarah, but like what Griffin Dunn doesn't see because he's like the yuppie interloper, is like someone's safe haven. And I think that that's like kind of a fun, lovely way to start looking at the city.
Yeah. It's a wonderful show. I'll just mention very briefly some of the future guest stars you're going to see. Bowen Yang, Julia Fox, Z-Way, your former colleague, Josh.
Hell yeah.
Adi Bryant, Kate Berlant, basically everybody from Los Spookies. Dylan O'Brien already had a very memorable moment in the trailer, very good in the episode. Natasha Lyonne, Cola Scola, Rachel Dratch, Rosie Perez, and the aforementioned Emma Stone. So it's a rich text. There's lots to discover. And just like, put your phone down and pay attention, because there's a lot you're going to miss if you don't like take in every single frame of it. It's wonderful.
Even episode one, the pilot had a bunch of like New York alt comedy stars, whether Nick Naney, who played the letter O, and Sydney Damani, right, who was the wife within MELF, and Eudora. Like, it's just really, I also like am so inclined. I just like love when shows comedy weirdos to be comedy weirdos, and this is such a cool, so many buds doing great stuff.
I really enjoyed O's delivery as he's going through all the great things he's in, Orange, etc. Ooze, I'm in that one twice. All right, it is time to go around the dial talking about what we've been watching on TV recently. First up, Tara.
9-1-1 came up on a recent bonus episode, and Dave said the reason he had drifted away from it is that it spends too much time on the characters' personal problems and not enough on catastrophes, which is fair. And now that I'm caught up in the latest season, it really proves Dave's point. It was a shorter season than usual because of the strikes. It did start off promisingly with a gigantic multi-episode disaster. This is how seasons usually go. This time it's that Athena and Bobby, the Angela Bassett and Peter Krause characters, who are married to each other in, I would say, the most chemistry-free relationship in scripted television. They're going on their honeymoon on a cruise. Athena is bored. Bobby's loving everything, but they don't have to worry about whether they actually like each other anymore, because then pirates take control of the ship. Isn't that always the way? They start fucking it up. Gets Poseidon adventured upside down. The 118 have to ignore protocol to save them. Pretty good. Also introduces a helicopter pilot named Tommy, played by Lou Ferrigno Jr. He and Buck hook up, and even though we've never had any inkling that Buck is anything other than completely straight, in fact, the series premiere is largely about Buck getting into trouble for fucking strange girls while he's on shift. This is the best and most important development of the season. That includes the crossover with The Bachelor, because they can do that now that they're on ABC.
What?
Other than,
I'm sorry, I'm like way out of the 9-1-1 loop, and this is all blowing my mind.
I did watch the start of the Bachelor one, so I can paint a quick picture, which is it starts off just like the Bachelor. Like, I was actually just
with the rivals.
I was slightly confused for a moment because I didn't know what Tara was watching until the tone of it was like, this, something is a little off here. It turns out as they're taping the Bachelor, a crazed potential comes in and super glues herself to like the greeting area. And that is the first thing that the 9-1-1 crew has to deal with. The super glued super fan.
Yep.
Bachelor.
Anyway, other than another multi-episode disaster about Chim having a neurological problem that causes him to miss his wedding, the season has way more personal shit than anyone cares about, in my opinion. Reminded that what brought Bobby to LA from his native Minnesota is that when he was a heavy drug user, he caused a fire that killed his wife and child and almost everyone else in their apartment building except one guy named Amir, who's played by Malcolm Jawal Warner. He meets Bobby again by chance, even though the whole point of this franchise is no one can be enemies for more than two episodes. Amir is still pretty upset that Bobby killed his wife and also has burn scars over half his face still. And Bobby's so shook by Amir's confrontation that he decides to take early retirement. Then Bobby and Athena's house is targeted by an arsonist. Bobby carries Athena outside and immediately has a heart attack. Athena jumps to the conclusion that Amir started the fire. And while Bobby's in a coma, she breaks into Amir's house to accuse him on no evidence. She's a cop, by the way. It's not Amir. It's a coyote. It's not important. But in the course of not a coyote, the animal, a coyote as in a human smuggler.
Was absolutely picturing like a coyote gnawing through a wire, like a renegade
with
canine.
Like acme on the side.
There definitely have been coyote related saves in the past before. So I get it.
Wait, just to rewind a sec before you finish. Mm-hmm. When he had the heart attack, was there any reference to Narm?
Sadly, no.
What are they even doing?
I know. I agree. Anyway, so...
No Narm, so foul.
In the course of Athena saving Amir from the human coyote entirely by herself, she burns down the warehouse they're all in and also doesn't have an arrest warrant, so, like, way to fuck the eventual trial of this guy with grounds for appeal. Also, the reason we come to the 911 franchise is not for ACAB shit, so just have her get cats out of trees. It's fine. I don't want to see her doing, like, real cop stuff. And then there's other stuff with people and their kids. Don't care. I know seasons get unbalanced because they run out of budget for big set pieces. But as I've said before, a crazy save doesn't have to involve explosions. It can just be weird stuff stuck in people's skulls, ears, whatever. I don't care about anyone's children or parents or partners. Put someone in a vent or at the bottom of a well or in a crawl space at the Bachelor Mansion. This should not be hard. Fix your shit. Season 8 better be better than this. And
you heard all that, Joshua. This is the Mothership series. Mm-hmm. There is a spinoff, 911 Lone Star, which takes place here in Austin.
Yes.
Okay.
And in one of the episodes, a volcano erupts in Austin.
Yep.
And people are at a mini putt and fall into lava while they're mini putting. Mm-hmm. That's the show we're talking about.
Yes. That's what I want. Yeah.
Yes. That's what you want. Exactly.
It's basically, if you ever watch Holy Moly and your wish, I wish people could die in Holy Moly. 911 Lone Star was that show.
Yeah.
Now,
I have my own Boston-based Steph Curry animosity, but it's never gotten to that point.
Especially since season 5 of 911 Lone Star reportedly is going to be the last. They better pull out all the fucking stops.
Yeah.
Or I will be really mad. Anyway, that's 911.
Okay, so this is also, I understand the magnitude of scale with, but what we're talking about with shows like finding their footing and kind of specific things being allowed to exist is like, obviously these are huge shows, but every comedy it feels like is like, oh, you actually get 4 3-minute episodes and we play them during commercials within infomercials at 1 in the morning. Yeah. And then they're like, okay, 911, that works. Okay, now we're doing 911, 911, which is just, it's all about 911 for the whole season. 911, 912, that's a sequel that happens in a dystopian future. Yeah. And so it does, that is like what makes, you know, nothing against 911, but it is like what makes comedy feel so tenuous in this moment.
It's true.
In comedy with like specific voice when anyway.
When they actually like transported Mount St. Helens to the
to
set
Texas.
Yeah.
To do this and then back and you're like, can I get a wardrobe budget? And they're like, no.
Every time Dick Wolf farts, they have to cancel a show because he's got something new coming down the pike. Yeah.
Law and Order Special Flatulence Unit or whatever.
Exactly.
Or like SPU, am I right?
That would be a Chicago Med spinoff, I feel. For my plug, we dropped a new episode of Listen to Sassy, the podcast where we recap Sassy magazine, the magazine from the 90s. This one is just me and Dave. There is, of course, a whole Canadian corner. I forget even what we talked about. I just know there was one. But I want to tell everyone to listen to that. It's a really weird, fun show we do with Pamela Ribbon. Normally, she was in France this week. That's why she sat this one out. But I also want to direct listeners to the Listen to Sassy Club, where you can support the Listen to Sassy podcast on Patreon. You get full scans of every issue of the magazine. You get ad-free episodes. You get access to our Discord server to talk sassy with your sassy friends. It's a good podcast. So check that out. ListenToSassy.com/club.
Okay, Josh, what have you been watching recently that you want to tell everybody about?
Sure. So I feel like people are always asking me, people are always asking me for stand-up recommendations. And Rachel Feinstein just put out a new special on Netflix called Big Guy, which is the title of the special comes from, I think, the opening joke, which made me laugh so hard the first time I saw her do it at a comedy club. And I watched it, and it is one of the hours of comedy that's made me laugh the most in the past few years. It like really cracked me up. It is such an easy recommend to, because it's so straightforward and traditional in its presentation, but so specific. Like it's so much of the special is about Rachel's relationship with her husband, who is a New York City firefighter. And so it's not like the kind of 90s thing about my fucking husband. It is so specific to like, my firefighter husband is, like all New York firefighters I've met, obsessed with crypto despite being government employees. And it's like the funniest. It's so specific. I like really watched it being like, their relationship must be so strong to withstand how intimate this feels to watch. And so like, it just felt like the next level, like something that is so fun and pleasant and familiar. And she's such a great performer. She does the characters of her mom and her husband and family. And it's just like, it's the kind of thing that if this had happened 25 years ago, if the special had come out, you'd be like, oh, she give her a sitcom yesterday. And they just don't, you know, they don't make comedies for television anymore or film. It's all just Instagram reels. But it's so funny and delightful, and like it feels like it's flying a little under the radar. Like it hasn't been one that I've heard a ton of buzz around, and I've just been recommending it all over the place.
It's on my list. I'm looking forward to watching it.
Comedy weirdos, I think, will like it because it is so specific to this relationship and doesn't feel general, like ugh, marriage, right? And like people whose entry point to comedy is like Everybody Loves Raymond, I think will appreciate that quality in it while being willing to like take the walk to how unique this is to their specific relationship.
Nice. What do you have to plug? Where can people go see you or find out where can see you?
I have a newsletter. It's free. It's called That's Marvelous. I publish it every Monday into your email. You can get it at joshgondelman.substack.com. It's full of pep talks and other general frivolity. And that has all my tour dates in it. I've got a few more tour dates, Rutherford, New Jersey, Stamford, Connecticut, Pawtucket, Rhode Island. There's like a handful of tickets left. And then I'm shooting my new stand-up special in Brooklyn next Friday at the Bell House. And there are a handful of tickets for that as well. And then I am mostly off the road for a little while. You can find all my tour dates and stuff and stand-up videos and books and whatever at joshgondelman.com. But like, if you're looking to see what I'm up to, I'm not spammy with the newsletter. I think it's fun to read. I tried to make it like worth reading on a week-to-week basis in addition to just having my tour dates and stuff in it. So I'd love to see you there.
Now, where can people go to wish your dog Busy a happy 17th birthday?
Oh, that's great. So she's at Busy the Pug on Instagram. You can wish, that's controlled by my wife, Maris Kreisman, who's a genius, and she has her own Instagram. I will be posting pictures, you know, assuming she makes it the 4.5 weeks to 17 years old. It will
touch wood.
You know, yeah. She's an elderly pug. She is the joy of our lives and the bane of our sleep.
Mm-hmm. Bless her.
Timothy. Off with his pants.
Hey, it's me, and I'm talking about Justified, as you may have guessed. Dan and I are midway through season 5. Now, when I first put this in extra hot, great rundown doc, like whatever, life happened, but I think we were way back at like the end of season 3. But we, you know, we just can't stop popping these like Pringles. Although we are realizing that we're running out of show,
Yeah. It creeps up on you because the seasons are so short.
Yeah. It's not easy to do because the show is just so watchable. And like the more you watch, the more sort of like friendly and familiar it is. And the more you want to just like see what your friends in the box are doing.
Mm-hmm.
Not just because of Timothy off with his pants, although that does not hurt. Mm-hmm. It's not a perfect show. Season 3 was weird, honestly. Like, we just kept saying how weird it was, and then it ended, and we were like, okay, that's better that ended. That's fine. They don't do enough with Tim and Rachel. I am in the minority here, but I actually liked how the first season, it had like more of a case of the week deal. I liked that fine. I don't think going to season arcs was bad or wrong, obviously, but I wouldn't mind more one-offs about people robbing banks. But I do like that it sometimes tries stuff that doesn't work and then it backs off it because it just heard like from the culture that it was like, you know what? A little Jeremy Davies goes on forever. So could we just not with Dickie anymore? So yeah, I am unsurprisingly loving the show. I'm sure that there was fierce debate about the likability factor or whatever of just subtracting Winona and the kid after a certain point, but I really respect that they just looked at the situation and were like, this is not actually what we're here to do.
Yep.
And there will be many fewer reasons for him to remove shirt and pants if this storyline continues existing on screen, so we're just not going to do that.
Mm.
Although it's a shame, it's the most I've ever liked Natalie. Is it Z?
Zaya? I think so.
The real love story here, however, is obviously between Raylan and Boyd, and I credit the show for getting that. It is not a blue sky show, obviously, in the traditional sense, but it has that same understanding of why people watch it and what it then needs to do for those people to keep watching it, but it doesn't pander. Great, great show that knew its own strengths and weaknesses, and even if that's like the only reason that future generations remember it, there's something to that, that it didn't take itself super seriously. It like knew what it had and what it was good at. And then after a while, it just stopped doing it before anyone could get sick of it. So yep. Yay, Justified. Some surprisingly great shows in the true crime space lately. I didn't think I was going to be saying that. There's been a bunch of stuff that I sat down in front of it with my arms folded and was like, okay, try not to fail completely. And then it wound up being kind of a B+, including Lifetime docuseries about Nicole Brown Simpson that I just thought was going to be the biggest piece of cynical shit I'd ever seen. And it was quite affecting and thoughtful. And I reviewed that at bestevidence.fyi. We have also talked about Linklater's Hitman, a lot of other stuff that's come down the pike recently. And once again, you can find that. It's a blog newsletter from me and Eve Beatty. It's at bestevidence.fyi.
Here's what's coming up on the Extra Hot Great Cinematic Universe this Friday on Extra Extra Hot Great, our supporter podcast. We have a force-inning episode for you. It is Prime Video's Escort Boys.
That's
he
right.
reads for the first time. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what that is.
We'll hubba, hubba.
Find out together Friday.
Would you like to me to tell you what it is?
Give me a little taste.
It is a French language dramedy, although same Kelly Rutherford, who played Megan in Melrose Place, is also in it because she lives in France now.
Yeah.
It is about a group of French gigolos who are also apparently beekeepers. And that's everything I know because I haven't watched it yet either.
Okay.
I know.
All right. Okay. All right.
Set a mouthful.
Right. I'm not angry at that description.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to be part of that and you're not yet a supporter, you can go to extrahotgreat.com/club. Sign up today. You get like a whole other episode at the end of the week. And then come back here on EAHG Prime in 1 week's time. We'll be discussing The Boys Season 4. We welcome back Andrew Cunningham for that. Tara, what are three words you can use to describe Season 4 for me?
Well, I'll quote my own review. Chunky human gravy.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a 4-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
Craftsman days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Save $100 on the Craftsman V20 6-Tool Power Tool Combo Kit, now at $199. No matter what the project is, Craftsman's high-quality, high-performance products empower you to build on. Stop by your nearest Lowe's store and check out the full line of Craftsman tools today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon. Presenting this week is our guest, Josh. Josh, what do you got for us?
I am here to present Season 2, Episode 3, It Follows, from the show Killing It. Killing It is a show that for probably months I thought was Nailed It with Nicole Byer, and then didn't consider it because I didn't think of them as separate shows. I wasn't like, time to create a new file folder in my head to think about this other show too. But it is a increasingly dark satire on the American dream and hustle culture. It is like the exact blend that I want in a show in terms of like really having a specificity and kind of heft to each episode that they really stick with you as units of TV, and also just like tons of silly bits, great, fascinating characters. Craig Robinson plays Craig, who is an aspiring entrepreneur who has like identified what seems like a real business opportunity for himself in the kind of medical field and decides to open a farm for saw palmetto berries, which are good for prostate health. I don't know if that's true within the world of the show. Please don't take my medical advice. He teams up with Claudia O'Doherty, who plays someone who's unable to ascend from the morass of like the gig economy into actually having a life. She drives an Uber and then pulls a billboard behind it to make an extra revenue stream. She sleeps in the billboard. It is like really dark, but her performance is so buoyant and wonderful. And Craig Robinson carrying a show, I think, and he has a estranged wife and a daughter, and it's like he's surprisingly tender and lovable as a leading man, given that, you know, you kind of see him do a lot of goofball stuff as a side character a lot of the time, and he's really great. And there's just all sorts of wonderful, fun performances by, you know, comedy weirdos, as I mentioned before. Rel Battle, who plays Craig's brother, is a career kind of low-level grifter. It's all about how kind of this is all the same thing, like business is a grift, grifts are grifts, but one is considered more sustainable than the other. And he's trying to go straight. And in an attempt to go straight, he decides to, but he's, because his identity is so toxic and he's on the run, he decides to buy a new identity from a guy named Bug, who is played by Kyle Mooney. So let's hear a little bit of their conversation, their intro to each other.
So my boy works at the Department of Records. He issues the death certificates, but sometimes he forgets to issue the death certificates.
You talking for real forgets or crime guy forgets?
You know I'm talking crime guy.
Nice.
Yeah, so if someone dies and ain't got no family, my guy sells their info to the highest bidder.
So this is a new identity.
A social security number, birth date, a list of previous residences, everything you need to become an upstanding citizen. Won't nobody know it's you, it's just so fresh and clean.
So fresh and so clean, clean.
You're becoming someone new, it's just so fresh,
so clean.
So fresh and so clean, clean.
So
I'm like, what's we going on right now?
I am now Marty Simkowitz?
Damn. And that feels like it's always been your name.
You think people really gonna buy this shit?
Buy me as a doctor. You seen the neighbors? I get like 20 high doctor tides a day.
But we in Phoenix. Those high doctor ties, that's not them being friendly. That's high, I'm watching your black ass, Dr. Todd.
Okay, I don't know what he's going on about. I mean, like, there's hella black people in Arizona, right? There's you guys. Damn, though, there's like a bunch of the Phoenix Suns. Y'all are thriving up in here.
Okay, you guarantee this is going to work? You pay me back if I can't get a job with this, and not fucking Bugs money.
Hey, okay, let's calm down. There is no need to besmirch Bugs money.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I guarantee it's all going to turn out fine, Mr. Simkowitz.
Obviously, things go wrong, or else there would not be a TV show. And it is about how this identity that was supposed to get Isaiah, Rel Battle's character, out of this trouble, he becomes haunted by like a host of debt collectors on debt collectors, that is kind of a horror parody of what it is to be in debt in America, to owe money. And It's just like very nicely executed. The performances are really uncanny and bizarre from the debt collectors. Let's roll the debt collector intro clip, please.
Who the fuck is Rodney LaMonca?
The guy you're working for.
No, I work for American West Receivables. I'm a debt collector. You owe us $73,000, Mr. Sepkowitz.
Okay, I'm sorry, man, but you got the wrong guy.
I've got the right guy, Marty. 348 South Cactus Shadow Lane. Oh, congrats on the new job, by the way.
Look, I'm telling you, man.
You know what? Did you really think that we were going to stop looking for you? Did you really think that Radio Shack would forget?
Radio Shack? Come on, man. Radio Shack went out of business.
But debts never die. Marty, American West bought up your account, which means you owe us now $73,000.
So obviously it's like so real in terms of like, this is what happens to people, right? People get in debt, the debt gets bought by other debt collectors. People don't, the debt collectors are, the businesses are not incentivized to care about human misery at all and are just collecting on behalf of a company that takes money on behalf of a company that no longer exists. It is extremely funny to think about how someone would go $73,000 in debt to Radio Shack.
Thank you. I don't even know how that's possible.
It's like such a funny, and that is like a recurring bit throughout the episode. And it's just like really haunts him. It ruins his relationship, that and his history of con artistry and lies. And this is kind of a weird episode to pick because it's very light on Craig and Claudia, but it is also like such a beautiful like nuclear unit of television. And then at the end, There's a twist with that brings Craig back in, but it also features, this is maybe my favorite Tim Heidecker performance in the show of anything I've ever seen him do. It's so funny. He just gets to go like on a scale of 1 to 10, he's like a 13 as a scumbag. It's just, again, these people are allowed to be like, it's written so funny and they're allowed to be such like cartoon avatars for greed and it's also a version of the American dream that I've never seen punctured quite this like specifically and clearly before. So let's hear when we see Rodney Salamanca, who's been mentioned again, and this is Tim Heidecker.
Well, you got some big brass balls calling me out of the blue like this. You know how much trouble you caused me?
With the cops?
No, with my wife. Ever since Katrina found out that her son was murdered, she's been a total buzzkill. She stopped whitening her teeth. She let her fillers go to shit. It's like being married to a fucking jack-o'-lantern. I don't even enjoy cheating on her anymore because she deserves it. So here's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna shoot you in the fucking head. Whoa,
before you do that, you might wanna hear me out.
Oh yeah? Why is that?
Because I'm about to make you $20 million.
Go on.
Three words. Saw palmetto berries.
So this whole show is kind of about how the only way to keep your head above water is to already have money or to kind of like genuflect to the institutions of capital and how corrosive those institutions can be. It is, I think, easy to get those messages across in a way that is true and unpleasant to watch. And I find the show to be like so propulsive, so funny, so inventive, and like using this kind of like spectral debt collector army as the way to convey this point is like extremely effective and funny. A like really worthy, I've used this term before already today, but like full side quest episode where I think, you know, you watch some shows and you go, okay, whatever, the star's shooting a movie this week, so we get a half an hour of somebody we don't care about. But like Rel Battle really carries this episode well. It's like an extremely specific premise. And I think like on an episode to episode level, the show does something I really love, which is has an arc that feels really satisfying as a story and a narrative for the season. But you also on an episode level, which I've said a fucking thousand times, I'm sorry, you get these like satisfying, unique stories that feel self-contained and like you've watched an episode of television, not like a biopsy from a greater season. And yeah. I think this is a great version of that.
Okay, thank you, Sarah. This episode was redolent with process. So why don't we start with you, since that's your jam?
Sure. I also confused nailed it and killing it until starting this episode that I was like, oh, it's just a spinoff of, like, where's the cake? I soon realized my mistake, but was not unhappy to be interfacing with this. I think that it's not easy to do this sort of commentary on corrosive capitalism and like debt arbitrage and all this shit. And not get, like, it's hard to keep it on track tonally, or it would be for me, because it's just so enraging. Like, $73,000 from Radio Shack, and then having Jackie Earle Haley, of all people, which I love that his career is like this Moebius, that it just keeps looping, like, you know, he's like legit in these somber Oscar-nominated roles where he's really a sketchball, and then he's like playing on that in comedies. Love that for him. But to keep that tone, not light exactly, but not just sort of like get bogged down in what a fucking grift capitalism is in its entirety, is not easy. And this episode played it really smartly, that in addition to sort of always using in that runner about like all the different debt collectors and all the different sort of mid-range companies that just seem kind of like mediocre and grazy and samey, that, and then the button about like Ashley fucking Furniture Marty, yeah, that it was like, yeah, exactly. Like, it's that kind of, that you can imagine the creative team just like making this huge list on the whiteboard of all these companies that it might be. Yep. And it had to be these, and they picked correctly. Mm-hmm. And then there's the runner of Dame, just not only occasionally being like, can we please just go rob another bank? Because mm-hmm. that's like more straightforward and it's what we do. It's easier than this. But that he's like, you know, naked and with the like gadgety face mask. Yeah. Or he's like, oh yeah, Bug also sold me this robot that'll suck my dick. Or Bug being like, does either of you need a t-shirt cannon? And it was like, why does that question sound legit? Then all of these like toys that he's selling are funny, and the delivery of that is funny, and this character is funny, but there's also this underpinning of serious, like, how capitalism distracts you with shiny toys that you don't need and are probably overpriced. But the tone of it is exactly right, that it's like disgusted with the situation, but also finding the black humor in it. And I thought that that was really well done.
It was like a mix of Breaking Bad meets the Coen Brothers or something in that regard.
A great touchstone. And I think the, not to give too much away, but the arc of the show, if hosts and listeners haven't seen it, is very Breaking Bad as a dark comedy. Like, by the end of season two, which like might be the end of it, I don't know if it's been officially canceled. It was a Peacock show, which I did not bode well for people seeing it. But it is by the end, the season two finale, I was like, fuck, I hope they get another season, just because this is like, I like gotta take a shower. It is dark in a cool way.
Right. So yeah, I enjoyed it. And I also enjoyed that. I mean, I got the sense, you know, having quickly read up on the not nailed it-osity of the program, that it was like, oh, it seems sort of weird that we haven't seen Craig Robinson at all. Mm-hmm. And, you know, is this like a typical episode? But as everybody listening, or almost everybody knows, one of my criteria for is it canon worthy is, do I want to let it flip over on the streaming service and like keep watching into the next episode, which I did. I would happily revisit this. And it was really fun from like a just sort of writing process, why does this work for me standpoint, to look at it and be like, all right, there's like heisty, grifty vibes, which I enjoy, but there's also this, you know, pretty serious commentary. And how are they, like, how is the build letting that happen? So this was really a fun half hour. And because I felt like I'd seen everything that Nailed It have to offer, that I don't think I would have ever sampled this if you had not brought it, Josh, for the canon. So thank you for that. But I'm excited to hear what the rest of the panel has to say and whether they've had more contact with the show than I have besides this one episode. So who's up?
I'll go next. We watched the first episode and it just kind of didn't hit, but this made me want to revisit it and go back to the beginning because, yeah, I was not expecting it to have like so many big ideas, and the very deft contrast between the legitimate debt collectors all in their like matching black coats. And then when they go back to Bugs to complain that this name isn't actually so clean like he was promised, Bugs explains, well, no, they have rules, like they can't bother you before 8 or after 9. And Isaiah's like, I don't care about your vampire rules. Like, that all of these guys actually are more dangerous than, you know, Rodney LaMonca and his organization, because they have more access to like legitimate paperwork that can track down, you know, Marty and his many bad debts. Oh, God. I mean, so true. The list of all the shit that he's lined up. And then when you find out what the real situation is, and the reference to why the episode is called It Follows, which is your only way of getting out of this is to pass the bad name to some other sucker, like in the movie It Follows, sort of, is so brilliant. And we already talked about it, but like, yeah, $73,000 to Radio Shack on what? On how many transistors
did you buy?
It's
so funny.
Like 80,000? Anyway.
That's a lot of dongles, man.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of dongles.
As someone whose mortgage is now being serviced by the fourth company to have bought our debt, like all of that sort of rang true. And our finances are in order. We have not, you know, we're not getting dinged by this stuff. But like, this is a real thing that happens. And, you know, debts never die is a scary thing to think about. Mm-hmm. I also wanted to shout out Rel Battle's great performance, because for us who had no, or for me at least, I won't speak for Dave, but I had no context for this episode. And the opening scene is this woman in therapy, and she's talking about this guy that she just met, and he's a doctor, and, you know, she doesn't want to be up his ass too much to asking about his day, and he always changes the subject to something else and whatever. And then they pan over and we see that it's Isaiah passing as Dr. Todd. He's in scrubs. And like, this guy's performance is so good, you know, before you have any context for it, he's not a doctor. Like, this guy is running some kind of scam. He's so good. Even before you get there in the narrative, you can tell something is up with this poor woman. And the end of their relationship is pretty funny too, where it seems like maybe she's going to accept him, but no, he's got a lot of mess and she's too smart for that. But yeah, this was great. Great performances too by the guest cast, Kyle Mooney, especially Tim Heidecker. I agree. Really funny. God,
so
the
funny.
Idea that it's no fun to cheat on his wife anymore because she deserves it is such a great mean line, and he is perfect delivering it. So excellent pick of episode to get us back into it, and great presentation, Dave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember watching the pilot way back whenever it started.
I mean, 2022.
Yeah, and I think this was a good choice for me personally, this episode, because Craig Robinson, when he's not in his sort of like lovable, what is it, Pontiac Bandit mode?
Pontiac Bandit.
Yeah, I find him often too sardonic, but this one was light on him. But I just want to say the reason in my mind that this was very sort of like in the formula, Coen Brothers-esque, is for some reason the treatment of all the debt collectors as sort of like leisure wear men in black felt very Coen Brothers-esque to me. And then the button where Jackie Earle Haley, debt collector, is himself in debt and being chased by a debt collector,
right,
is extremely Oh Brother, Where Art Thou sort of chase dynamics going on. And I thought that was really great. So a great reintroduction to the show, Josh, and a fine episode unto its own for all the reasons everybody else said already. So let's put this to the official vote. Saverty Bunting, what say you? Canonworthy?
Oh, fuck. I guess we're doing this. Just kidding. Yeah, this was really fun. And I think it's canonworthy. So it's a yes for me.
For me as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Woo! That means that Killing It, Season 2, Episode 3, It Follows. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
Gotta do it again. Timothy. Off with his pants.
He is the winner this week. He was cast to voice the Terminator in Netflix's animated series. Feels like a waste of a Timothy Oliphant to only use his voice, but it's not my decision, and I guess I'll take whatever I can get.
What if the Terminator is in a bathtub just wearing his Terminator cowboy boots?
I mean, depends how they draw him, I guess.
All right, who is our loser of the week?
The morning show's got a twofer. Great news, everybody. The first part is that Jay Carson, who is a morning show co-creator, hold for the loser part, because that's not actually it. What it actually is that he is advising Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s, quote, campaign. I guess Jay Carson is a brain worm. The more you know, star wipe. The other one is that Juliana Margulies, my favorite, JK, but the morning show and her performance on it actually did a lot to redeem her for me before this latest meltdown. But she's not coming back to the morning show for season four. The fact that the creators or the writers room is at pains to be like, oh no, we already made that decision before the unpleasantness means that they totally didn't.
Speaking about the unpleasantness, do you know what time it is?
Welcome. It's game time.
It's game time. It's been a bit since we've had a regulation game time on the show due to illnesses and obligations and technical stuff. So to remind you, we got to rewind back like six episodes or something like that. This is the third game time of this season. The scores are Tara 1, Sarah 1. Josh, we're looking to get you to put a point in the value guess column today. And today we are playing Game Rhyme, and it comes from yours truly. Ooh. In Game Rhyme, one word of an existing TV show title has been swapped with a rhyming word. I will read you the log line of the new show created in that process. You name the new show's title. Here is an example. The Duttons sell the family cattle business and open up an ice cream shop in Montana. What is the rhymedificated new show title based on that synopsis?
Yellow Cone?
Yellowstone became Yellow Cone. Yes, that is correct. And that will get you 1 point. No hints. You know it or you don't. We've got 24 questions, but we will do a Grossworth Equalizer Challenge Zone right in the middle to help whoever is in last place. Deal meal situation, please, Tara.
Sarah D. Bunting has two. I have four. Valued guests have one plus Eric's meal for a total of two.
Let's throw it to Picky to see who's going first.
We will start with Tara.
All right. Our order will be Tara, Sarah, then Josh. Are we ready to play Game Rhyme 2020's edition? That's a little twist. All the shows today are shows that premiered in 2020 or beyond.
Yes. Yes.
Here we go, starting with Tara. Your synopsis is as follows. A brick house of an ex-Marine gets your whites white. It's a TV show. We're changing one word to a word that rhymes, giving you the new TV show title. Once again, a brick house of an ex-Marine gets your whites white.
Bleacher.
Bleacher from Reacher is the correct answer, and that is worth 1 point. Sarah D. Bunting, you ready for your first?
Yes.
A private investigator and future defense attorney in the 1930s solves his cases by doing the exact opposite of what is expected of him. Feel free to talk it out. No harm in it.
Okay. Doing the exact opposite of what is expected. I believe that the foundation program is Perry Mason. So what would be the opposite? Doing the exact opposite of what is expected is a thing that I will be stalling while I think of an answer.
We'll say this is one of the trickier ones up top. I did randomize everything, so. A little conceptual. I'm going to buzz you there.
I can't pull it.
Josh.
Steel meal?
Steel meal. All right, Josh, what do you think?
Yes. Contrary Mason?
Yes. Contrary Mason. Yes. He hasn't even had his question yet, and he's on the board. Josh, are you ready for your first actual question?
I am.
A reformed Norse god reminds you that you alone are responsible for the prevention of forest fires.
So I imagine the reformed Norse god is Loki, and unless there are more words in the title to the show than I remember, I'm just going to go with the only word rhyming and make it Smokey.
Smokey, yes. Only you could prevent forest fires, Josh. So it's a lot of responsibility. This is a big country.
Yeah.
Great Mitch Hedberg joke about that.
911.
All right, you ready, Tara?
Yep. Okay.
After Earth becomes uninhabitable, a pair of androids take human children under their charge, cover them with a sugary liquid, and let it dry. Once again, after Earth becomes uninhabitable, a pair of androids take human children under their charge and cover them with a sugary liquid and let it dry.
Oh, no. I think this was that Ridley Scott show that I never watched and I barely remember what it was called. I'm out.
She's out. Anybody know this one? The show was Raised by Wolves.
Yep.
This is Glazed by Wolves.
Sure. I knew it was something wolves. Sure. I couldn't remember the rest of it.
Sarah D. Bunting.
That's what Raised by Wolves is about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's exactly that. An Upper West Side apartment building filled with shepherds, cowboys, and gauchos provides endless fodder for a homegrown podcast.
I really hope that this is only herders in the building. Is
well
it?
Done.
Yay!
Back to Josh. An aging bounty hunter sets his sights on a nice place in the Outer Rim and wants to show off the precious small stream of water that runs through it.
Oh,
keep in mind,
boy.
These are all shows that started in 2020 or beyond.
Aging bounty hunter.
Aging Outer bounty Rim. Hunter sets his sights on a nice place in the Outer Rim and wants to show off the precious small stream of water that runs through it.
I'm out to sea on this. I tap out on this one.
Steel meal
from Tara.
The Brook of Boba Fett?
The Brook of Boba Fett from The
course.
Book of Boba Fett, yes.
Oh.
Was that a steel meal exchange we just encountered here?
Yes.
Yeah, we flipped them.
All right. All things even out. Tara?
Yes.
An ex-CIA agent and his two Rottweilers want you to turn up the heat or give them a blanket or something.
Oh, The Cold Man.
The Cold Man from The Old Man. Yes, that is correct.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah, an American football coach heads to England to polish all their valuables made of brass, copper, stainless steel, chrome, aluminum, pewter, and bronze.
Could you read that again, please?
And an American football coach heads to England to polish all their valuables made of brass, copper, stainless steel, chrome, aluminum, pewter, and bronze.
Polish all their valuables. I know it's Ted Lasso. Mm-hmm. Ted Brasso? I don't know.
Ted Brasso is correct.
Great.
Brasso
wow.
is what you use to polish all those metals. Correct.
Oh, okay.
I am particularly shamed / proud of this one, so get ready.
Uh-oh.
Josh, okay. This is for you. Armed with a set of 24-inch pythons, a foreigner shakes up feudal Japan.
Okay. So I feel like this is Shogun, and I'm trying to think of the rhyme. A pair?
A set of 24-inch pythons.
Okay.
I mean, it is a pair, but...
Okay.
I'm saying set for a reason.
Okay.
He's thinking.
I know. I'm, like, trying to think of all the snake
rhymes
names I know.
Shogun.
I know.
I'm going to call this one on time.
Yeah.
Anybody else know this one? Who's got the set of 24-inch pythons? Hogan. Hulk Hogan. This is Hogan with the mark over the O, of course.
I got stuck on Gun Show, flipping it, and I couldn't get past it.
Yeah.
Oh, I was just thinking about snakes. Two snakes.
Yeah, I was like, what's a group of snakes?
That's his arms. He's got a set.
I know. No, when you said it, I knew it.
Yeah.
But until then, I was locked in, inflexible.
Everybody's got one more question before we hit our score break. This one is for Tara.
Okay.
Charlie, with her wrinkled lips and nicotine-stained teeth, roams the country solving crimes along the way.
Smoker Face.
Yes, correct, from Poker Face.
So close to what that show already is.
It's true.
Sarah, despite Heidi Klum's doubts, Tim Gunn drained it in three for a birdie. Keep in mind, 20 and 20 and beyond.
Okay.
Despite Heidi Klum's doubts, Tim Gunn drained it in three for a birdie.
Drained it in three for a birdie. So it's not like Project Fairway. It's... What is the name of their show?
I can't remember it either. We've talked about it on this podcast.
It's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
It's going to be a problem for your answer.
Yeah.
I don't know the show.
Drained it in three for a... what rhymes with pot? I don't know this one. I'm out.
The show you're trying to remember is Making the Cut.
Oh,
so this is Making the Pot.
Making the Pot.
Sure.
I was right there. I was on the green.
All right, Josh, this one's for you. We'll have a score break after it. He rules over the realm of dreams, but thanks to Coppertone, this member of the Endless is decidedly not pale.
Something tan. Gosh. He rules over the dreams.
The realm of dreams.
The realm of dreams. I'm only thinking of Freddy Krueger. I'm so out of the loop. I'm tapping out on this one too. I'm in a real funk.
This is the show from your friends at Netflix, Josh. It is not the Sandman, it's the Tanned Man.
The Tanned Man.
Oh, of course it is.
All right, that's halfway through. Let's get the scores, please, Star.
Okay, it's pretty close. Sarah and Josh are tied with two. I have four.
All right, so that means that we're going to have a team up in the Gross Earth Equalizer Challenge. So the way this works is I have a bunch of Trivial Pursuit and Trivial Pursuit-esque boxes behind me dealing with television. We're going to give Josh the choice of which box we want to answer from. So here's what we got.
Great.
We got the classic first edition TV extension box from the 80s, the purple box. We have 90s pop culture, pop culture 2, and the 80s edition. So we got 80s, 90s, and two versions of pop culture.
Let's do 90s, please.
90s. All right. Good choice. The 90s has the additional benefit of all the questions on the cards are from one particular year. So I can give you that info as I find TV questions in here for you.
Good luck.
For you both. So confer on your answer. Give it as a team. You'll split the points. So this is one. So we'll do, well, let's just do 4 and 2 for the sake of math, because I know you guys hate this.
All right.
I hate them.
Good luck, us.
Good luck, us.
Good luck, indeed.
What animated cable classic debuted with a celebration of Yak Shaving Day?
Yeah, what's the year?
Oh, I'm sorry, 1991.
I think that's Ren and Stimpy.
Oh, that sounds right. Yeah.
Ren and Stimpy is the correct answer, yes. 1991 again. What 71-year-old actor celebrated his Oscar win by doing a set of one-handed push-ups on stage?
Jack Palance.
Jack Palance. I'll just give you that one. That is the correct answer, yes.
Sarah's really carrying us here.
1991 again. What TV family resided at 10 Stigwood Avenue in Brooklyn?
That I don't know.
Brooklyn family.
I'm trying to think of who, like, where did, like, I mean, this is too old, but, like, where did the Bunkers live there? Who lived in New York in the...
Since that is too old, I'll let you know they live in Queens.
Ah, thank you.
Yeah, I don't know this one.
All right, want to just take a stab? TV family, 90s?
I mean, like Seinfeld's parents? I don't know.
Oh, interesting.
No, that's not right.
Because they're in Florida, right?
Yeah, they lived in Del Boca Vista.
Was it? I mean, this feels bleak to say, but my best guess is the Huxtables.
You're correct. It is the Huxtables.
Wow. Nice. You did it!
All right, so you now have half to. If you can get the next three questions, we're going to double your take.
So they each get two, right?
No, they each split two.
Okay.
Yeah. They got one apiece right now.
All right. I believe in you.
You shouldn't.
Too bad.
Big mistake. Huge.
1994.
Okay.
What sports tune was recorded 250 different ways for a Ken Burns documentary?
Oh, I wonder if it's... Sarah, what do you think about Take Me Out to the Ball Game?
I think that's correct.
You are both correct. Yes. Two more to go. 1995, guys. What character left the sitcom Friends because he couldn't stop humping the floor lamp?
My best guess, Sarah, is Marcel the monkey.
I am in line behind that answer.
Oh, it all comes down to the next question. You can double your points. Another point each if you can get this. Okay. 1991 again.
What
primetime soap came to a merciful conclusion after a 13-year, 357-episode run?
Merciful.
1991 is the year. What primetime soap came to a merciful conclusion after a 13-year, 357-episode run?
I feel like it's either Dallas or Dynasty, but I don't know which one.
Ooh.
Josh, you want to filter that down to one?
Unless you had a third idea.
My only one, because I only remember one soap that I'm like, this stopped existing when I was around this time, was Santa Barbara.
Was the but only that's one not primetime.
Oh, it's I'm sorry. It was. I didn't hear primetime. I spaced. So primetime, Dallas or Dynasty. I don't know. Which one do you think went longer?
Well, here's the thing. In these questions, yeah, it's always fucking Dynasty.
Okay, let's do Dynasty.
This could be the one time it's not, but let's go with it. Please, yep. Crystal, protect us. Dynasty.
Dynasty is, in fact, wrong. Dallas.
Whoa. What? Wow. I thought Dallas was longer. That's crazy.
Dallas, 13 years. Oh, that's you so came so years. Close, guys. That Why? Was a heartbreaker. But you still got 1 point each.
It's always Dynasty or Mount Kilimanjaro, I swear to God.
There is so many. You're correct. This particular box set has so many Dynasty questions. It's crazy. God, there's definitely somebody it. Who watched
Dynasty. I am sorry.
Oh, close. Close, though, guys. Let's get the updated scores.
It's certainly even closer now. Sarah and Josh still tied, but with 3, and I am barely ahead Woo. With 4.
All right. Just 1 point between everybody. Let's get back to Atara's next. A collection of alternative storylines of comic book characters in small flat-bottom rowboats.
Marvel's What Skiff?
What Skiff, yes.
Oh, wow.
I just want to tell you guys, Dave was working on this game last night on the couch while I was watching various Tara shows, and occasionally he would giggle to himself, and I would say, what's so funny? And he would say, you'll find out tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I am.
Yeah.
He I like is Skiff. His biggest Skiff. Fan.
Delighted. All right, Sarah.
Yeah.
He'll fight on behalf of an ancient Egyptian god, but only during the 6th month. Once again, he'll fight on behalf of an ancient Egyptian god, but only during the 6th month, Sarah.
This is a show we talked about on this podcast and was swiftly forgotten by everyone on the podcast and in culture.
Yep.
Yeah, I just...
I think I know.
No memory of that. June Ra? I don't know.
All right, it's open.
Steel meal? You got one steel
you
meal
left. You know it better left. Than I do. No, but you do too, and you know it better.
I'm not going to do it now.
Okay.
Is it Moon Knight or June Knight?
June Knight. You should have used your steel mill. In fact, it was June Knight.
I couldn't remember the full name.
Oh, yeah, that thing. Oh, my God.
All right, Sorry, Josh, buddy. Are you ready?
Yes.
In the post-apocalyptic future, the ghoul horrifies surface and vault dwellers alike with his one testicle hanging out of his tattered pants.
One testicle. The ghoul, one testicle.
In the post-apocalyptic future, the ghoul horrifies surface and vault dwellers alike with his one testicle hanging out of his tattered pants.
Gosh, I'm so bad about post-apocalyptic stuff.
It's recent. It's incredibly recent. Probably the most recent show in this game.
Okay. Then I definitely haven't seen it. Right.
Too busy touring. Too busy having a life, having a career. That is from Fallout, Ball Out,
sure.
That was a heartbreak.
Sure.
Tara.
Yeah.
A series looking at all but one of the American president's luxury hotel experiences. A series looking at all but one of the American president's luxury hotel experiences.
I do not know.
Steel mail.
Steel mail from Josh.
White POTUS?
The White POTUS.
Ah,
correct.
Well done.
Wow. Nice bit of business, everyone.
Number 17.
Spread eagle.
Spread eagle.
For Sarah. Railroad baron zombies and opera-loving wives zombies are much faster than previous generations of zombies. This is a little tricky. You need double pop culture property knowledge to do this one.
Can you read it, the clue again, please?
Railroad Baron zombies and opera-loving wife zombies are much faster than previous generations of zombies. What's that show, you think? What Bay show are we talking about, Sarah? Debuted in 2020 or 2021 or 22, 23, maybe even 24.
I think it's the Gilded Age, but I can't tie it together with the zombies, so I'm out. Someone should steel mail it if they have any available.
Sarah's out. That is because they're faster. They got the rage from 28 Days Later. That's the Gilded Rage.
Okay.
That was a tricky one. All right, back to Josh. Starfleet has an excess of planets and wants to make a trade for some fresh inventory.
Okay. So we've had a few Star Trek series lately, right? We've had Picard, Enterprise, Below Deck. So this is Starfleet has an excess of... Can you say that one more time?
Starfleet has an excess of planets and wants to make a trade for some fresh inventory. Going through his Star Trek repertoire.
I know.
Nothing rhymes with Picard.
I know.
That's a good hint.
Yeah. I'm out.
He's out. Doesn't got it. Anybody?
Mm-mm.
Star Trek Exchange New World.
Oh,
that's the one I missed.
Yep.
All right, this is question. It goes back to Tara.
Yes.
Steve Carell is the head of a new branch of the U.S. military that defends the nation only with bear spray.
Mace Force?
Mace Force from Space Force, correct.
Wow. Remember Space Force?
I was going to say, speaking of shows that culture forgot.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah, the brave first responders of Austin save property and lives as a group, piling into their one automobile like a bunch of circus clowns.
Deep in the heart of Texas. Is this the 911 lone car?
911 lone car. It indeed is. Yes. Back to Josh. The Sacklers are making the Bishop of Rome ill. The Sacklers are making the Bishop of Rome ill.
So we're talking about maybe opioids or OxyContin. And the Bishop of and the Vatican. My best guess is the Spew Pope.
Well, that's pretty good. We were looking for Pope Sick. Pope Sick from Dope Sick.
Oh, Pope Sick. Got it. Okay.
Dope Sick.
Last question for everybody.
Okay.
Well, let's get the scores quickly here.
Still so close. Sarah and Josh tied with 4 now. I have 6.
All right, let's get right back to it with your last question, Tara. The chief of the police moves to Oklahoma and gets angry about the state of coffee.
Okay, well, it's Tulsa King, but how does that tie into chief of police?
The chief of the police moves to Oklahoma and gets angry about the state of coffee.
Tulsa Sting.
Tulsa Sting. Yes, Tulsa Sting.
Clever.
When's Tulsa King coming back?
Yeah,
I have a mental block where I continue thinking of that show every time I see it as tall sucking.
That's what we're calling it from now on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well done.
Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Sarah, here's your last question. The heart-wrenching story of identical twins who examine the contents of a container and then identify what portion of that container is mucilage, epoxy, or Elmer's. I am so incredibly pleased with this one. Let me read it to you again.
Please read it again so that I can remember what this goddamn thing is called.
The heart-wrenching story of identical twins who examine the contents of a container and then identify what portion of that container is mucilage, epoxy, or Elmer's.
I mean...
It's also a song title.
I know this much as glue?
Yeah!
Wow.
And Dave gets a Sarah point for that clue. That was, oh my god.
But I was like, they weren't twins.
These things I believe.
I know, this much is glue.
Oh my god. All right, last one for Josh.
It's a good day at the office for David T. Cole.
Mm-hmm. Will Arnett provides golden color commentary as the host of this reality competition show in which contestants build fanciful structures made out of frozen waffles.
Ego Masters?
Nice.
Ego Masters from Lego Woo! Masters. You are correct. Ending it in style. All right, let's get the official scores, please.
It was close the whole time. Sarah and Josh finished tied with 5 points each. I have 7.
All right, nicely done, Tara. Before declare you officially the winner, let's use the tiebreaker. Whoever shouts out the answer first will win a steel meal for future use. Here we go. William Shatner appears via Zoom to challenge B-list celebrities to survive the trials and tribulations of living in Mason, Ball, and Kerr containers.
Jar Trek?
Jars on Mars.
Stars in Jars?
Stars on Jars, yes. Stars on Jars
I'll
to
take it.
Sarah.
All right.
And today's belongs to...
Tara.
Good job, Tara.
Good job, everybody. Close game. Well, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We offered proof of our existence by discussing the new Julio Torres series, Fantasmas, before going around the dial with stops at 911, Big Guy, and Justified. Josh killed it with his canon argument for killing its It Follows episode. We crowned winners and losers of the week. And Tara was a winner of this week's Game Time. Next up, Escort Boys on Extra Extra Hot Great, and come back here next week for The Boys, not to be confused with Escort Boys, Season 4. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
in fact, he was wiping when the lightning hit,
Sarah D. Bunting,
can we please just go rob another bank?
And Josh Gondelman.
Oh, boy. Please don't come after me if I owe you money.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
I'm not accessible like that. That's why you got to put me on late, you know, when they're all liquored up. We talked about this.
I don't make the order.
Fine. You know what? This club sucks, and so do you. You know what? I'm proud to be niche. I don't care. Yeah, I'm only kidding, man. Come on. You know me. Just give me a chance.
Oh.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.